So let's talk a little bit about targeted therapy, specifically as it relates to BRAF. And Axel, maybe you can kind of review what we know about BRAF mutations in colorectal cancer.
Yeah, so BRAF mutations actually have two different components as a prognostic factor. It's really the molecular factor with the poorest prognosis that we have identified, at least before we targeted BRAF. And BRAF mutation come in different classes. Actually, there are three different classes that are being identified. The standard BRAF V600E mutation is the one with the poor prognosis, where we at least some data that we want to counteract the poor prognosis by being aggressive up front. So, for instance, using FOLFOXIRI, bevacizumab, and non-BRAF V600E mutation, there's a lot of patients that actually have better prognosis. We can consider de-escalation therapy. But it's also a predictive factor and a negative predictive marker for the idea that at least before we had BRAF inhibitors in combination with EGFR antibodies, cetuximab and panitumumab were really not working in this setting. And so BRAF V600E mutation is a negative predictive marker for the use of EGFR antibodies with or without chemotherapy. But on the other hand, once we combine EGFR antibody with a BRAF inhibitor, like has been done in the VIC regimen, so bemrafenib, irinotecan, and cetuximab, or the Beacon doublet or triplet regimen, which we'll probably talk about in a minute. At that point, we can actually utilize BRAF V600E mutation as a predictive marker for the efficacy of this biologically designed targeted approach to inhibit the MAP kinase pathway.
Mike, anything you want to add to that and any comments about what we've learned about the biology here?
I think Axel's exactly right. I mean, it's a robustly prognostic marker. So just knowing that out of the gate is clinically useful. You often do see also a different distribution in metastatic sites, more peritoneal and some unusual locations, brain and bone. So I think it's useful to know that just for kind of understanding the patient's biology in front of you. And I think it's very true. A patient with a BRAF, I tell them a very different story about expectations than I do a patient that does not have a BRAF V600E, just based on that prognostic aspect. And then predictively, yes, we have new targets for it. I still also think it's a negative predictive factor for EGFR, but it's also almost a negative predictive factor for just chemotherapy responsiveness. These tumors just do not have kind of good kind of response to chemotherapy. And we see that probably most dramatically when you look at, giving second line or third line systemic chemotherapy where their response rates are really, and the PFS are really just horrible. And so it really gets a point where we want to use our best chemotherapy, a triplet up front, and then actually go and move towards targeted based therapy right after that. I mean, I think that's pretty clear in what we need to do in regards to addressing these patients. The only other side, with BRAF, there is an association of BRAF with MSI high, and we'll kind of get to that a little bit later. But clearly, a subset of BRAFs do have an MSI high component. And so clearly, you have two different targets. And I think, from my perspective, I think if you have that situation, often the immune therapy with the outcomes we see there probably would be driving the initial direction of therapy for that type of co-alteration patient.
So Axel, can you talk a little bit about what we've learned in terms of targeted therapy of patients with colorectal cancer and BRAF? It turned out not to be as simple as, for example, melanoma.
That's a very interesting story because melanoma BRAF inhibition works, and BRAF plus MEK inhibition is actually one of the standards of care for the 40% of patients in melanoma with BRAF V600D mutation. But Scott Kopetz actually at MD Anderson did the initial study of you're just using a BRAF inhibitor in BRAF V600D mutant tumors, vemurafenib at that time, and you really didn't see a lot of responses, probably around less than 5%, was very disappointing results, clearly not mirroring what we saw in melanoma. We've learned actually, that the MAP kinase pathway in epithelial cancers, particularly colorectal cancer, probably needs to be inhibited in more biologically, let's say, a strategic way, not just using a BRAF inhibitor, but acknowledging that, there's a feedback loop actually that when phospho-ERK as a readout of the pathway actually goes down, that the MAP kinase pathway gets reactivated through, EGFR signaling, which identifies actually how important this MAP kinase pathway is for tumor biology because the tumor tries to reactivate the same pathway over and over again. So we have learned actually from very sophisticated translational studies that we need to combine a BRAF inhibitor with an EGFR antibody to really shut down or kind of block the MAP kinase pathway, at least for some time, because we know that resistance mechanisms actually evolve quite rapidly. We've also learned that the addition of a MEK inhibitor doesn't really contribute a lot. So right now, the standard of care for these BRAF V600E mutant tumors is a biologic doublet consisting of a BRAF inhibitor like encorafenib and an EGFR antibody like cetuximab or panitumumab.
So recently we saw the results of the Beacon CRC study that randomized patients to receive encorafenib and cetuximab with or without benimetinib, where the old standard of care, which was cetuximab and irinotecan or FOLFIRI. The results showed that the combination of encorafenib and cetuximab with or without benimetinib resulted in significantly longer overall survival. And the response rate was 20% for the doublet, 27% for the triplet, compared to only 2% for the control arm. This study formed the basis of the FDA approval of the combination of encorafenib and cetuximab for patients with metastatic colorectal cancer and a BRAF V600E mutation. So, Mike, can you talk a little bit about how you approach the use of targeted therapy right now outside a trial setting for patients with BRAF mutant disease?
I think the data we've had is really kind of robust. You know, we've seen some of the hazard ratios of just being dramatic in regards to suggesting that clearly using targeted therapy is the approach that we should take. I think the issue that we have to recognize that we've shown from both the VIC data and the Beacon data is, you know, the control arm, you know, we're looking at, you know, 2 months progression-free survival. And so we are actually, you know, doubling or, you know, even a little bit more improving our disease control, but still, it's fairly limited. I mean, that's the one caveat. I think we clearly have a new direction here, but still BRAF is a challenging kind of disease state. And so clearly more efforts are needed. And I think moving these drugs, as Axel mentioned earlier, is something we want to actually explore and do and potentially even, you know, frontline combination with therapy or adjuvant. I think in regards to kind of standard of care approach, you know, I think the encorafenib and cetuximab combination is a combination where we see a good safety profile. We have the largest kind of randomized phase 3 study data there. And so for me, that's kind of the de facto standard that I utilize for this patient population in kind of second line space for them. I think the other issue that you have to be aware of in regards to treating the BRAF patient is that, you know, these patients do, you know, they have these worst prognostic outcome. And so you do definitely see this kind of rapid rapidity of growth. And you see rapidity of shrinkage from targeted therapy for the BRAF patients. But then also you do see when they evade that or you develop your adaptive resistance, it often can be very rapid. And so I do think it's very interesting sometimes where you can see rapid changes in regards to treating a BRAF patient that you have to be kind of cautious of. And I think, you know, maybe we can get Axel's opinion on this, given his work kind of with the ANCHOR study, where they had some really interesting data on CEA change in regards to early CEA change and also then kind of RECIST radiographic change, where you actually see very consistently CEA changes happening in almost all patients, yet those appear to be, you know, kind of rapid kind of CEA changes. And then you actually see a number of patients still demonstrating progression when you're kind of looking at your standard kind of 2 month interval, suggesting that there's even a subpopulation that potentially is responding quickly and then adaptively having resistance quickly as a possible kind of explanation for that finding.
So Mike brought up the ANCHOR study that you just presented, Axel. Can you comment on that?
ANCHOR used a biologic triplet combination of the Beacon regimen, which was tested successfully in the second and third line setting, now in the first line setting in BRAF V600E mutant tumors. So this was a two-stage design of a single-arm phase 2 study looking at, you know, 40 patients initially and trying to see whether we could at least achieve a 40% response rate, then expanding the study to a total of 90-plus patients now. And the primary endpoint of response rate was met with about 50% of patients having response. And the response actually came quite rapidly, and the waterfall plot was quite impressive. But as Mike pointed out before, you know, the progression-free survival was not as intriguing as this waterfall plot might suggest, because this waterfall plot really shows that almost every patient really had shrinkage, even patients considered with disease progression, which were off-target lesions. But progression-free survival was only about 4.8 months, so not as strong as, again, this waterfall plot would suggest, in line with the idea that BRAF inhibition, even with encorafenib and cetuximab here, and benimetinib in this biologic triplet, they are resistance mechanisms that evolve quite rapidly. And actually, I do see that in my clinical practice.